Wistful Thinking is brought to you by the Cage Club Podcast Network. For more podcasts about movies and nostalgia, visit cageclub.me. That's cageclub.me.
Welcome to Wistful Thinking, a podcast where we revisit beloved pieces of pop culture from our youth to see if they're still as good all grown up. I'm Kara Gail O'Regan, and with me, as always, is my co-host, Jordan Pullen Clark.
Well, you remembered my name, so that's good.
Hi! That's all that matters. And our guest for the third time in a row is Cage Club co-founder Joey Lewandowski. Hello, Joey.
Hello. Week 5 of Olympic coverage here on the Cage Club Podcast Network.
We actually have more Olympic coverage than NBC does.
Yeah.
Like, longer than theirs.
Absolutely.
So we win. Which is a perfect segue into my next sentence. We're continuing our winter sports-themed programming to coincide with the 2018 Winter Olympics in Pyeongchang, Korea. And today, we'll be talking about The Mighty Ducks from 1992. The movie stars Emilio Estevez as a self-centered Minnesota lawyer who is sentenced to community service coaching a ragtag youth hockey team. It's basically the Bad News Bears on ice, and it's great.
It's also basically Hardball on ice. That this movie, between the hockey setting, the lawyer setting, the mandate to coach a group of ragtag kids, like, this is the Keanu Reeves movie Hardball. This was basically written for him, and he was not, like, there's a list of people who they wanted to be in this lead role. Keanu not among them. Glaring oversight. Should have been him, but it was not.
No.
I would have loved if he was in this. Really?
I think that a range of some kind of emotion is good for this role, and I don't think he has that.
Did either of you look up who they wanted for this role?
No.
Yes.
So they offered it to Charlie Sheen, but he said no, and his brother
took
the role.
Who I think actually, yeah. I think Charlie Sheen would be more convincing as Gordon Bombay than Emilio Estevez.
They wanted Bill Murray, but he was too old. They also considered Tom Cruise,
yep. But he's too crazy.
Tom Hanks, but he's too much of America's dad. Actually, Tom Hanks would have been good in this. And Michael J. Fox, who I feel like I kind of sort of confuse, not confuse him with Emilio Estevez, but I think they kind of play the same type of role.
And they have the same hair.
Yes.
They're probably like the same height-ish.
So I don't
know.
I
can see that.
I don't know if you've heard an episode where Mike and I talk about it, but I confuse people based on hair. Actually, you know this firsthand, because when we watched Lost Highway, I was so confused, because you're like, oh, that's the same actress. I was like, no, it's not. Like, because it's the same actress with just a completely different, like, wig.
One has blonde hair and one
doesn't. And I was like, no. So, like, I, for some reason, great at recognizing voices, terrible with faces, and I'm further complicated when they change hairdos. So maybe that's why I think Emilio Estevez and Michael J. Fox are the same. Also, the only other person on this list was the guy who wrote it originally, Steve Brill, wanted to be it, and they were like, no, like, you're not famous. Why would we put you in this role? So, nope.
Not to be confused with Dr. Steve Brule of Tim and Eric fame.
I have my first question about this trope is, do you think ever in real life criminals get sentenced to working with children? Because I don't.
I don't think so either. I mean, definitely get sentenced to community service. And I don't know if you get sentenced to, like, specific community service like this, you know, or even like we talked about in the last episode, the movie Stick It, where, like, this juvenile delinquent gets sentenced to, like, joining a gymnastics team. Yeah.
But yeah.
I don't know.
Yeah, the judges in movies seem really willing to, like, make special deals for criminals. Who are involved in sports, who are loosely involved in sports.
So, in related-ish news in terms of the criminal element, apparently, and this is all stuff that I read on IMDb, the original premise of this movie was darker. It was about an ex-NHL player who became an alcoholic who then wanted to get revenge on his old coach by coaching against him. And then when Disney bought it, they were like, yeah, we can't do and we won't do most of that. And so they downplayed a lot of the adult themes and made it more comedic. But I feel like that would even be more extreme. Like, if he was, well, he wouldn't be a criminal there. So it'd be more realistic,
but
also more extreme.
Person.
Also that, yes.
I feel like you can in some ways tell that that's what they wanted to do, or that there was some version of this movie that that's what that was, because, like, it's a kid's movie, but he's straight up, like, drinking a beer and driving. That's not, like, I feel like you wouldn't see that in a kid's movie today. And, like, the beginning, it feels kind of dark in, like, the ways that he's yelling at the kids, and in the ways that the kids are talking about how their old coach used to talk to them. It actually, like, seemed like if this could have been a different movie that actually was really dark, and the kids were, like, could have been, like, really funny and, like, raunchy, and then it totally didn't turn into that.
Yeah.
But the kids did, almost all of them, turn into actual adult actors. Like, I was blown away. There's, like, yeah. 5 or 6 kids who went on to do things.
Okay, let's go through it. Obviously,
so
Joshua Jackson. Obviously.
He's so adorable.
Who's great in this? Yeah, he's so good. Yeah.
Also, in that role, so you know, originally, before we stray, I'm dropping all my trivia here so we can just get it out of the way. Jake Gyllenhaal auditioned for that. Yeah. His parents did not want him to do it, so went to Joshua Jackson. But Leonardo DiCaprio auditioned. Mm-hmm. Did not get the part, I guess. Juliette Lewis wanted to be the girl part, but instead that went to Marguerite Moreau, who is Katie from Wet Hot American Summer, so she went on to do things. Mm-hmm. So that's 2. Mm-hmm. We also have Eldon Henson, who's the street kid that they get with the hard slap shot. He's Foggy on Daredevil. We have...
And he was in the Hunger Games movies.
We've got Jussie Smollett from Empire is here. And we've got your boy from a previous episode, Danny Tamborelli.
And not just him from The Adventures of Pete and Pete, but a couple of other actors as well.
Yeah, what's his name? Aaron Schwartz was on Pete and Pete also. Mm-hmm. And then was in Heavyweights, which is also a great movie.
Right, which and also starred the kid that played Goldberg, who is in...
Yes, and Goldberg was in that too. Yeah. I feel like maybe we've talked about this before because of Pete and Pete, but Aaron Schwartz is, like, super hot now. Like,
yeah, we talked about
so
that.
Hot. It's shocking.
I don't think who is
it
he?
It is actually very shocking.
Who is he in this?
He's, like, one
Carp.
Of the chubbier kids.
Yeah, he's, like, the blonde chubby kid.
Okay, how old is he? Like, I don't know, is he one of the younger kids or a medium kid or an older kid?
He's medium.
He's a medium kid.
They okay. were all supposed to be... They treated them as if they were all the same age, but they obviously weren't. But they were all in a classroom together, like, in the same class in school.
Yeah, that was weird.
I thought that was
like,
weird.
Even the much older kid who seems to be in high school.
Yeah, but then there's also, like, a list of 10 more kids who are in this that didn't get famous.
Yeah, but, I mean, you know, with kids' movies, there's, like, 1 or 2 that might become famous someday, but there's a lot of them in this.
We have, like, 5 or 6 in this. That's a really high... Like, find any other movie from this time period with that many kid actors who went on to actually be successful, like, make a good living at acting. Like, I don't know if you can. Like, how many of the Little Giants or how many of the Little Rascals went on to do things?
Oh, man, Little Giants. I don't know. And what about from Heavyweights, too? There's a lot of kids in that.
True.
That's what you guys got to do. You got to do all kids. All kid casts and just rank them in terms of how successful they are as adults and make them all feel terrible.
Apparently, some of the young actors who claimed when they auditioned that they could play hockey were in fact lying and had to be trained before filming.
I was like curious because we've been talking about like figure skating movies and like how Michelle Trachtenberg had learned to figure skate. I was like, did everyone have to learn to play hockey for this? That seems hard.
Yeah, I didn't find like a specific list of who could and could not. Although, the other girl in the movie, because there are only 2, the girl that's a figure skater did not know how to figure skate, so she had a body double. Mm.
Did she actually do that pirouette thing at the end?
No, her body double did.
Why? Oh. So they had to cast two girls for a girl who was in the movie for like 1 second. Why wouldn't they just cast a girl?
She's got a pivotal role, Jordan.
She does. I know she's really important, but she's not like she talks that much. Like, you could have taught a figure skater to say three lines and then just had whatever. I didn't work.
The girl that was her body double, like, also was an actress. So I'm not sure. Like, why? I mean, come on. She was in an episode of Unsolved Mysteries. I'm sure she's great.
I love that show. Who is your guys' favorite? Okay, so we all saw this when we were small, yes?
Yep.
Who is your favorite kid when you were young? And who's your favorite now watching it again?
Oh, I don't know. I don't think I had a favorite on either side.
I don't know if I had a favorite. I mean, Goldberg is great, obviously. Goldberg's just like a cool kid. What I was more surprised by, and it's similar, but not exactly the answer to the question you asked, but like, I was surprised that I enjoyed this less than both of the figure skating movies. Like, I was like sort of psyched to watch this movie, and I was like, oh, okay. Like, I liked it, but I liked Ice Princess. I liked Ice Princess and Cutting Edge more.
I felt the same way, although I'm not at all surprised by it.
Oh, I liked this more than I liked Ice Princess, like, by a lot. And Cutting Edge is obviously the best movie that we watched, so.
Okay. You've seen that, though.
Yeah.
Okay.
Before we answer your question, director Stephen Herrick, not only did he also direct Bill and Ted's Excellent Adventure, which, I mean, how exciting is that, but he also directed one of the Cutting Edge sequels in 2010. Oh. The Cutting Edge.
Whoa, in 2010.
Ice.
That's like bottom of the barrel Cutting Edge.
Yeah, right. No, I think that was the first sequel.
Oh, really?
No, that's the third one? I don't know.
Wait,
it's
so
not the first
that
sequel.
Movie came
the
out
first 90... one was 2006.
So it was 90. Oh, yeah, because it was 14 years later because their kid grows up to be a skater, right? That was the story?
Right.
Okay.
Yeah. So. Yeah, I think it's the second or third sequel. He also directed Don't Tell Mom the Babysitter's Dead, which is one of my personal favorites.
Oh yeah, which we've talked about doing a bunch.
I just watched, I mean, unrelated, I just watched Real, no, I keep calling it that. I just watched Weird Science, which is maybe another movie that would fit into the oeuvre of this. But I did not remember that Robert Downey Jr. is one of the bullies in that movie. I'm like, this is great.
Interesting.
But anyway, going back to your question, Jordan, I think Goldberg, obviously. Marguerite Moreau I like now because I like her as an... I mean, she doesn't do a whole ton in this, but it's cool that she's a lady representing on the team. I don't know. So I guess those two are my answers.
All right. And Kara, you don't care?
Yeah, not really. I'm inclined to agree on Goldberg. I also really like Joshua Jackson in this. He's so adorable. And he, like, really carries the role very well.
I like that they, like, casually went out of their way to make sure we knew that Goldberg was Jewish. I think they did, for 1992, I think they did a pretty good job of being inclusive of lots of different kinds of kids.
Yeah,
on this ragtag team. I think they did a pretty good job. Not amazing, but there was two girls on the team. They didn't make a thing of it at all. They didn't treat them like they were girls.
And towards the beginning of the movie, I was like, ugh, there's only one girl on the team. Come on. And then they actually recruit a second one.
Yeah,
which
they got
I was
another
like,
one.
Hey,
and they find, like, not only do they recruit a second one, but she can do a thing that nobody else on the team can do, and they use it, and it helps them win.
Yeah.
Not only no one on the team can do, no one in the league can do.
Yeah. So, like, that's pretty cool. They didn't, like, build them as strong characters or anything, but...
There's no other team in the league that has a girl, right? That we see, at least? It's just them.
Not that we can see, no. And they definitely, they left her braid hanging out of her helmet so you could tell she was a girl when she was on the ice. They didn't hide it.
What I like, if this reminds me, like, when I played Little League, there were, like, a couple girls, at least in the early stages, who played in the boys' league. There was just, like, maybe, like, two. But like, I always thought, like, I was never on a team with one of them, weirdly. I just remember playing against them. But, like, I always thought that was cool. It's like, you're not going and playing softball, like, you're playing baseball. You know what I mean? Like, and I like that you're just like, I'm gonna play with the boys. And like, they did. Like, I don't remember how good they were. I mean, how good were any of us, really? But like, I think it's cool when, you know, in movies or real life, when ladies are able to stand up and be like, no, I'm gonna do this.
I really like, there's one part where, so the second girl, the figure skating girl who joins the team is Little Pete's big sister. So they're Tammy and Tommy. And they're like having a little argument. He's like, well, you made me figure skate, so now you have to play hockey, which, you know, okay, that's fair. All right. He did figure skate. We saw it at the beginning. And so, but she's like kind of whatever about it. So she like is starting to skate onto the ice and she's like, what do I know about hockey? And she pushes him and he falls down. Yep. And in like the perfect tone, I don't know how he is so good at this, he says, more than you think.
Yeah. That's good. I actually, my brother played hockey and I did figure skating. Because like if we had to get up and go to the rink that early in the morning, like both of us might as well be doing something. And then I like really wanted to try playing hockey, but I suited up once to try it and like just there's so much gear involved that like by the time I finished getting dressed, I was like, I'm already exhausted. This is ridiculous. My hockey dreams died that day.
I really also liked about this, like, just, like, another thing that I would never pick up on, like, when I was a kid. Like, these are poor kids.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And,
yeah.
Like, they're doing this because they love it. They can't afford uniforms. They can't afford equipment. And when he takes them to that store to go shopping and they have a shopping montage and they're just, like, having the time of their lives, like, having things that they couldn't afford, like, it made me so happy. I happy cried.
And you know what I love about
it
that scene is
so
that
great.
We don't get any cutaways to adults like glaring at them condescendingly.
No.
It's 100% pure joy. It's Goldberg getting into hockey, like getting into goalie pads in the middle of the store, you know, people dropping things and like playing with things, and it's just them having fun, and the movie's like, no, this is a good thing.
I like the way that they treated the kids in this movie.
Yeah, they treat them mostly like adults. Or I feel like, you know, I don't remember what I was going to say, so never mind.
Well, they are, I mean, they all act like adults to the point where Charlie pimping out his mom is, like, uncomfortable. He's like, hey, you should get after
yeah,
my mom. And I
was
like,
was
oh,
weird.
No, like, you're 14. Like, I get that you, like, want Amelia to be your dad, I guess, and want your mom to find a guy, and, like, he's a good guy. Or, I mean, when he's not calling you a bunch of losers, like, he's a good guy. But still, like, it's weird. Like, that is, like, I get why he's doing it, but that's a little too, maybe, adult? I don't know.
Yeah, that was weird. He shouldn't be that involved in that, maybe.
Or involved in that at all, really.
Right, yeah. And, like, Gordon, as the adult, should be like, no, we shouldn't talk about this like this. But he's also not a very good adult.
Yeah, he's pretty bad at being an adult. Something, actually, that struck me while I was watching this, it's interesting that you say they treat the children like like adults, because I was watching this just like, these children are babies. They're like, they're so young, which is like kind of heartbreaking because of the way that like they're spoken to by their coaches and stuff.
Yeah.
Like, really, I found it kind of upsetting.
I
like,
I
how dare
too.
You? Those are children.
I was really upset. Like when, I mean, that one coach, like the coach of the Hawks, he's so mean. So mean.
And he says to the kids, it's not worth playing if you can't win. With like, what a shitty thing to teach children.
Yeah. And then, like, they're like, the Ducks, before they're even the Ducks, are, like, talking about how their old coach used to talk to them. And he would, like, call them bastards and, like, and even Gordon calls them losers. I mean, like, eventually that comes to mean, like, we're supposed to believe that that means, like, a good thing, kind of. But, yeah. I really like there's like he's making his like fifth apology to them because he keeps like screwing up and they all get mad at him and reject him. And then he goes on some journey and learns some lesson and then comes back to apologize. And it's like the time when they're in school. Also, I cried when they all started quacking at the principal.
Oh, I decided I'm just going to start quacking at people when I get upset or angry. Because it will just be so confusing that they'll, you know, something.
Right? Also,
but I think
the
it's
way,
a good way to deal with anger.
The way they shot that yelling principal was, like, very surreal. And I was like, oh, I wish you did more of the movie like this. She's very scary when you shoot her like that.
Well, because they have the camera, like, down really low and they're, like, shooting up at her.
A little
right?
tilted. It was really weird. But so he comes back to apologize to them while they're writing, I will not crack at the crack. I will not quack at the principal, you know, 100 times on the blackboard.
In a classroom surrounded by blackboards. Like, there's no classroom in the world with that many blackboards. But you need enough kids, like, writing things on the walls. I was like, oh, this is the perfect classroom for a class punishment scene.
That's what it is. That's just, that's the room in the school where they send kids to do the Bart Simpson.
I feel like I went to CCD in a Catholic school that definitely had a room like that. So I think that, like, detention rooms with lots of blackboards were at one point a thing.
But so he comes back to apologize to them, and he's like, you guys know what it's like to be misunderstood, right? And one of the kids says, yeah, of course, we're kids. Which I just thought was, like, so real. So real. For all humans, but, like, definitely for kids.
Yeah.
Well, while we're on the subject, I cried 5 times during this.
Oh my god. That's 5 more than me.
I cried 5 times. Let's see. So I cried when they scored their first goal. I cried when they quacked at the principal. I cried when he came back and apologized to them in detention. I cried when Adam Banks...
But that's,
Banks,
like, not a long period of time. Was that just, like, a rolling cry from, like...
No, it was, like, I stopped and started. I stopped and started.
Two discreet cries.
And then I cried when Adam Banks got hurt and they were, like, rolling him off the ice and him and Jesse were, like, good for the first time. Because it took a lot for Jesse to trust him, and he, like, did it, and he was like, go in the thing. And then I cried when they won, obviously.
Did you cry when Gordon gets on the bus?
No, I don't care about Gordon.
Oh. Well, yeah,
no,
but they just...
You know what? That's not true. I, like, started to cry when he was like, and I'll come back next season, because I was like, yes, you'll never leave them!
Well, I found that scene really emotional because, like, he has these, like, moments with each of the kids as he's, like, walking past them, and they each have, like, something, like, really specific and like, sweet to say to him as, like, a word of advice or a word of wisdom. Yeah. And it just,
oh,
you know,
I didn't cry at that part because I was distracted because they didn't let the girls talk to him. Like, neither one of the girls said anything to him. So, like, I noticed that and then, like, went off on that train of thought. So I actually wasn't really paying attention to what they were saying.
Yeah, okay.
He said the line, maybe one of you will write a book about it in jail.
What? I completely missed that. That's crazy.
It was like in the beginning where where he, like, drove out onto the ice and he's, like, yelling at them and he's like, this is, like, one of the things that I remember most from the movie. He's like, I hate hockey and I don't like kids. But it's, like, during that scene, and they're, like, kind of going back and forth, like, not liking each other, and that's a line that he says to the kids. Like, that, like, to me, that's, like, oh, this movie used to be a different movie, that a line like that got left in there.
But even, like, the opening scene, that's, like, a flashback to Gordon's childhood, his, like, traumatic moment of, like, why he doesn't play hockey anymore. Mm-hmm. That is, like, really dark and intense and, like, a really weird way to start a Disney movie. Well, Bambi.
No, not really. All of the Disney movies are about... Oh, no, I was going to say all the Disney movies are about dead parents, but they don't reveal that until later about him, huh?
With the... Yeah. Yeah. So, I rescind that statement about it being dark for a Disney movie. Did you know that Gordon Bombay is actually a combination of two well-known brands of gin, Gordon's and Bombay?
Yes.
And that's where his character's name comes from.
And it has never been more apropos for an alcoholic. What's weird, sort of, maybe it's because it's a Disney movie, but he, like, never relapses, right? Like, he always, like, he relapses into being an asshole, but he never has another drink.
No, that's true. He does immediately stop drinking. Yeah, I don't know. That, I mean, so we just did Sweet November podcast for Charlize, and I feel like the Keanu character in that movie mirrors Gordon Bombay a lot, where, like, there's this, like, event that happens. He's a real asshole, workaholic, and then, like, some event happens in his life that just, like, immediately makes him a different person, which, like, I don't buy that a person can change that quickly. And I guess we do see both Keanu and Emilio kind of relapse into their assholery, but I don't know. They just, like, I guess we're supposed to believe that deep down they were good all along.
Right. Well, I wrote down after watching it that The Mighty Ducks is like a movie version of those Who Saved Who bumper stickers about adopting cats and dogs. Right? Because it's like perfect. Gordon Bombay comes into this situation and he's supposed to save these kids from delinquency or like whatever, but really it's the kids who save him.
I love that. And also, Jordan, that's a little bit of a sneak preview, because I don't think that Sweet November episode is going to be out for another week or two. So make sure you come back. No, 2 weeks. I think over 2 weeks. 2 weeks from tomorrow, I think.
Yeah, that sounds right.
So come back and check out Sweet November. Or maybe a week from tomorrow. I don't know. I can't keep track of when we're recording these and when things are coming out. But anyway, come back to Sweet November, where we talk about Keanu being an insufferable asshole and Charlize being not much better, surprisingly. Speaking of not much better, we have a showdown of cinematic lawyers in this movie that we have. Emilio obviously is a lawyer in this movie, but we have Lane Smith, the Hawks coach, who is the prosecution lawyer in My Cousin Vinny. And so there's a hockey showdown of movie lawyers. And I love it. I really like Lane Smith. I mean, he's a terrible character, or he's a good character in this because he's a terrible person, I think. And he's, you know, too harsh on his boys and too harsh on Emilio when he's young. But I think I like him as an actor. I think he works as this, like, guy that you can't help but root against.
Mm-hmm. I really like...
Did you...
No, you go ahead.
Oh, I was going to say, did you know that the courtroom scenes, they were filmed in St. Cloud, Minnesota, they were dressed up to give it more of a hockey feel, which is like a weird thing to do to a courtroom. But this included adding small black circles that look like hockey pucks near the ceiling architecture. And instead of taking them down after they finished filming, the hockey pucks remain to this day.
Changed forever by the Mighty Ducks.
Also changed like forever this... from the Mighty Ducks is that the Ducks became a real team after this movie, like the Anaheim Mighty Ducks.
Yeah.
Because Disney, I don't know if Disney still owns them, but Disney owned them.
Did own them.
Yes.
At least.
And so they're like, hey, that's a movie that people like. Why don't we name that? Like, I don't know if that's ever happened before, but I love that.
I think it's kind of weird, but I also really like the name Ducks for a team, because it's not like trying to be tough or anything. It's kind of silly. I don't know.
Well,
like
there's
it.
a scene where like some of the kids are fighting each other, and he asked them, like, have you ever seen a duck fight? Which, like, I definitely have seen ducks fight.
Ducks are kind of mean,
for sure. Yeah, they're kind of assholes, but his point was that ducks don't fight each other, which is wrong.
And I don't
think
he
made some other good points in that speech. I don't remember what they were. Something about how, like, ducks fly in a V and flock together and stuff.
Oh, yeah.
But I think other birds probably also do that.
Can we talk about the flying V and how, in hockey, that has got to be the easiest shit in the world to defend against? Like, there's no reason for it to be this unstoppable move, because, like, the whole thing in hockey is, like, you're not sure where the puck's going to be. But, like, the puck's going to be in the middle of the ice. Like, you have all five people there. Just take care of it. Like, I never realized until just now that this flying V, this, you know, unbeatable move in the history of hockey films, is actually probably the easiest thing in the world to stop. And yet, here, one for one so far, 100% success rate.
I mean, maybe, but all of the hockey players hadn't yet seen the Mighty Ducks, so they didn't know to look for it.
Yeah, I feel like the Ducks' strategy is to basically just either do some, like, weird shit or some fake-out shit and just, like...
distract people.
Yeah, and just to believe that the other team will get so distracted for a second that they can make their move, and it works most of the time.
Yeah,
but that definitely won't work forever.
Yeah. Gordon also tells the children, take the fall, act hurt, get indignant.
I wrote that down.
To, like,
I love it.
Rack up penalties on the other team. Yeah.
But, like, I don't know what the end goal there is, because, okay, so you have them draw a penalty, but four of them are still better than five of you, especially at this point in the movie.
Right.
Like, you've done no coaching at all. You've just said, hey, fake hurt, and... you think that, like, the five of you who have never played hockey before are going to be able to outskate four Hawks? Like, get with it, Gordon.
Oh, but that's how we learn what a good heart Charlie has. Is that his name? Josh Jackson's name?
Yes, Charlie. Mm-hmm.
Because he refuses to do it. And that's what eventually brings them together.
What's also weird is that Emilio is like, hold your eye like you got cut, but he's wearing a full face guard. Like, how is he going to get a cut eye when he's wearing, like, a fence in front of his face?
I don't know. I don't know enough about hockey fighting.
Before...
I feel like it's possible.
That's before they go on the shopping spree, right? And they're... I mean, one kid is wearing, like, a seizure helmet. Like, none of these helmets
true,
are
really
particularly... you know, protective. And I think his face guard, like, pops up really easily. It's not, like, bolted into place or strapped into place like it should be. I don't know. But anyway.
I really like that Charlie's mom looks kind of like a regular lady. I mean, I think, like, we've already established on this show that almost everybody looked kind of regular in 1992. Like, nobody was walking around looking like smoking hot because it was 1992. But I really like that.
And Emilio's, like, really into her. I mean, like, I don't know that we dive too
deep into her
relationship.
Yeah, that's what I mean. Like, they had, like,
yeah,
the, you know, attractive male star of the movie get with this mom who wasn't, like, I feel like, if even today, and not that, like, you know, I don't want to sound judgy, like, moms can look like whatever they want to look like, but, you know, like, they sex people up in movies, and they really didn't do that to her at all, and I like that.
Yeah.
It's so rare.
That's true. Or even more common is, like, the mom is, like, super hot, and the male romantic lead is, like, kind of schlubby and dumb.
Yeah.
A real Kevin
but
James
they seem
type.
Well matched. Yeah. Although I actually, I really think Kevin James is hilarious.
Really?
I'm not proud of it, but I do think he's very funny.
I thought he was really funny, like, when his first special came out when I was, like, 12. That was funny. Maybe it's still funny. I don't know.
You know who I really loved in this movie? I wish he was in it more, is MC Gainey, who's the limo driver. He's been in everything. He is so good in this movie, and I feel like they just, like, I wish, like, he's on the bench at one point, I think, filming them, but, like, they don't go to him enough. Like, he's the source of constant comedy whenever they want him to be, and I'm like, no, we're just not going to use him. And I wonder, I feel like, because this is a pretty short movie for what it could be, and I wonder how much it cut out, and I'm sure that he had more to do, that they're like, well, we don't, like, need to focus on him because it's about the kids, but I just wish we got more of him because he's good.
Maybe there used to be more
really
of
funny.
Him and he got cut.
Cut on the eye?
Yes. Hockey style.
Gordon, at the beginning, when he's still in the limo, because they transition from a limo to like an 18 passenger van at some point because they need to shuttle the kids around. But when he's in the limo, he does this like really amazing spit take where he's like drinking coffee or something and like just spits it out all over the place. And I just feel like we don't see that enough in movies or in real life.
You know, I don't think when I watched this as a kid, going back a little bit, is that I don't think I ever realized that the team is named after Emilio's boss's name. Like, his name is Duxworth. Yeah. So, like, hey.
Yeah, I don't think I realized that either.
Which is weird. Like, I guess it feels normal and natural because Emilio's like, hey, you want to give us $15,000? It'll make you look good. Which is a good, I think it's a smart way to get him to give him the money. But I feel like his last name being Duck, like, I don't know. I mean, I guess it makes sense. Like, that's another way to, like, get him to say yes. But I feel like there could have been a cooler story there. Or, like, maybe that was their team. I don't know.
How would you tell it?
I feel like either the team would already have to be known as the Ducks. I guess before Emilio takes over, they're just known as D5, because that's just the district. They just didn't have a name.
Yeah.
District 5, mm-hmm. Yeah.
That's disappointing. It's like some real Hunger Games shit. Speaking of Hunger Games. But I don't know how you weave a duck into the story, especially since they're in Minnesota in the middle of winter. I don't know that many ducks are around, so I guess it kind of has to be named after a person. Or there might be, like, some kind of, like, motivational story that Emilio tells, like, hey, that's us, we're just like a bunch of ducks.
After watching several days of nonstop Olympic programming, I can tell you that I've been thinking a lot about the inextricable link between sports and advertising, and that actually put Ducksworth in perspective, and I was like, oh no, that actually makes perfect sense, that, like, him having a hockey team named after him would be advertising for the law firm. Like, it doesn't just make them look good, it, like, reminds you that they're a thing.
Right, but it's not, like, it doesn't say Ducksworth anywhere, and the law firm actually has three names in it. I don't remember what they are, but it's, like, Ducksworth is the first one, and then there's two other lawyers. And, like, It's not like they even, like, write small on the jersey somewhere, like, Ducks, parentheses, Ducksworth. Like, Ducksworth, it's not Ducksworth actually good advertising for their law firm. Well, unless people are talking about it, you know, word of mouth, like, ooh, that's why they're named the Ducks.
I remember going back to Little League, back to T-ball era, that you would have local businesses sponsor a team, and their team name would be like that, and then you get to name the team. And so I remember one year I was on a team, and there was, like, a dentist or something. Her name was Dr. Ruby. Like, her first name was Ruby, so we were Dr. Rubies, because I guess that's just like a, hey, go see Dr. Ruby. But then her son was, like, who's on the team. He's just like, we could be anything. He's like, why don't we be the Raptors? And I was like, I don't even know what a Raptor is, because we're, like, seven. He's like, oh, they're the coolest dinosaur. So we were Dr. Ruby's Raptors. But, like, that at least says, like, hey, go see Dr. Ruby for a bunch of dinosaur-related stuff or dentistry. But here, it's not like you're Ducksworth's Ducks. It's... you're just the Ducks. Oh, by the way, if you need legal advice, go see them.
Yeah, sure.
Although it is good that the other two lawyers in the firm are named last name Hockey and last name Mighty, so it does work out.
Oh, yeah. That takes care of it.
Yeah, definitely.
Oh, another connection to Keanu in the lawyer movie, back in Devil's Advocate, is that Emilio is 30-0, just like Keanu was. So, like, I wrote down, I'm like, is he going to get called the big city by the devil to support some kind of, like, seedy case? But I guess he's instead saved by the local police after he does bad? I don't know. Real weird history. I was just, I had so much Keanu on the brain here, because Keanu grew up in Canada, near Minnesota, loves hockey, lawyer in a couple different movies. And I was just like, it has to be Keanu. So I was just trying to find all these different connections.
And same director as Excellent Adventure.
Yeah. So there we go. I mean, the fact that it's not Keanu in this is baffling to me.
I don't, like, have a ton to say about this, but I feel like we need to bring up that there's also a rollerblading through a mall montage.
Yeah, there is.
That, like, definitely wouldn't be allowed in real life. It was super and cool. I want to do it,
I suspect that this is the source of my irrational fear of mall water fountains, because they knock a lady into the big pond water fountain thing in the mall.
Yeah, I know. And like, one, they're under adult supervision, who is also on rollerblades with them. And he's encouraging them.
I really want a pair of rollerblades now.
I used to love rollerblading. And
yeah, me too.
One of my first pairs of rollerblades was, like, they used to make these rollerblades for little kids that basically had, like, square wheels so that you couldn't go fast, because they're for, like, tiny kids. So, like, I had those. And I also remember, like, partially learning to rollerblade through the Four Seasons Hotel in Washington, D.C., like, in the hallway. Because we used to, like, visit my mom when she was working. She would be on tour, and we'd go visit her, and, like, we stayed at pretty nice places, and so I think we were visiting her, and I had a new pair of skates, and just, so that was my version of the mall scene, although the mall looks more fun, because other kids were doing it, too.
I loved seeing that when he finds the older kid who is really good at hitting things really hard. Fulton. Yeah, he has one of those street hockey pucks with the balls in it, which I remember playing with very fondly. Street hockey's fun. Not as fun as ice hockey, but it's not as dangerous.
I don't know anything about street hockey, because I've never done that, but it just makes me think of Wayne's World, where they're just constantly like, car.
Yeah, I never played ice hockey, but I played a lot of street hockey, but in driveway. So I guess it's not really quite street hockey. That's more driveway hockey, but definitely more fun on rollerblades with a ball than on ice skates with a puck. But
who knows? Would be fun now. I want to do that now.
Me too. Well, I was thinking about it, and I was just like, oh. I mean, because really, the attraction to hockey for me comes from being able to hurl your body into other people's bodies. It's like, okay.
I think you need roller derby.
Ooh.
Isn't that how roller derby works?
On skates. I think you're right, actually. Yeah. Ooh.
Ooh.
Either way, I will injure myself. It won't be good, so I shouldn't do those things, but I would like to.
Let's start an adult street hockey team.
Okay.
We live in three different states. We do live in three different states. I forgot. I was thinking Harris and North Jersey, but no, we live in three different states, hours and hours apart from each other. But a co-ed street hockey team somewhere in, want to say like maybe eastern-ish New York is probably the center point of the three of us. So let's
get it
going.
The middle of us, yeah, probably. Or like somewhere in Connecticut is probably somewhere in the middle too.
No, that would be out of the way.
Oh, because it's not good for you. No, you're right. You're right. New York. New York it is. Here we go.
No, I think like Albany probably would be.
All right, Albany.
Well, that would be really far.
We're coming at you with our co-ed street hockey team.
I mean, sure. Yeah.
More trivia that nobody's brought up yet. Mark Maron and Stephen Brill, who wrote the movie.
Wait, Mark Maron wrote this?
No. Stephen Brill wrote this. But
that's where I know his name from.
Yeah, so him and Mark Maron were, like, tight when Mark Maron was in Boston and, like, first starting comedy. So I haven't heard the podcast, but apparently he's talked about him a bunch. Maybe he's even been on? I didn't do enough research to know.
No, because I recognized his name, and I couldn't figure out, like, from what. Yeah. And it just is probably from him mentioning it multiple times over however many years
and
I've been listening to him.
I read something that said that Mark Maron was cast in the second one in just, like, a small part with, like, one line or something. And he was supposed to be playing somebody who was angry, but he was, like, so angry that he scared the kids, so they cut him out.
Oh, no.
Which, like, sounds right.
Yeah, that's really
cool. I can't believe that Mark Maron would get angry on a movie set or in real life or anywhere. Right? So out of character for him.
He seems very calm as a person.
But what I was going to say was that I only hope that if we do have a street hockey team in Albany, that we get picked up by America's number one hockey publication, which is the...
Yeah, my favorite magazine.
Which is the...
Well, that was a hell of a yes and, Jordan.
It's the way that they convey all information. And, like, the front page story is like, hey, the Ducks won a game. Or, no, the Ducks tied a game. Is there a front page story the first time? Like, you know, this hockey publication, this newspaper that apparently services all of probably North America, the fact that a Little League, a junior Minnesota Hockey League team tied a game... I know that it's like a movie trope or whatever, but I just thought it was funny that like they keep going back to this, like, this is the story of America. But outside of this Minnesota town, we see no interest at all.
I'm going to take this one step further and say that, like, they go as far as showing a photo in America's number one hockey publication of Gordon Bombay and the Scary Hawks coach, like, professionally photographed, faces half in shadow. Like, where did that photo come from, America's number one hockey publication? Like, did they go to the studio and you took their pictures? Like, what are we supposed to believe that is?
I don't remember there being America's number one hockey publication.
Oh, it came up so many times. Like, they would do, like, it would, like...
Every game, they would have, like, the results on this thing. It was, like, an intercut. Like, they would have, like, a freeze frame of the hockey, and it would go to, like, the big picture on the newspaper with a giant headline. It's like, Ducks one game away from playoffs or whatever. So it was, like, we knew what was happening, but it still felt the need to, like, re-emphasize with us, like, hey, you guys know that they're, like, playing hockey, right? And we're like, well, yeah, we know that.
I gotcha. I didn't notice that at all.
It was a very silly choice.
Yeah. It could have been, like, Minnesota's number one hockey publication. Slightly more believable.
Yeah. Or just, like, hockey publication. No ranking needed. No location needed.
One of the other teams in their league, called the Panthers, the Ducks wind up technically winning the game because the Panthers withdrew from the season because they all got the measles. Because apparently, this is taking place in like 1960-something.
Right. Like, when's the last time besides now, because people stopped vaccinating their kids, but like, when's the last time people got measles?
I mean, people still do get measles in the developing world, but like, in the United States, people were not
here.
Entire hockey teams were not getting measles in 1992 for sure.
I feel like that and America's number one like hockey publication, like those are the things that like go too far and are too silly. And like, if the whole movie was like that, this would feel like a terrible kids movie. But because it only does it like a couple of times, it's forgivable.
Oh, interesting. What? This doesn't make any sense. So I just Googled measles eradication in the United States because this is right up my alley of things that I'm interested in. I don't know. U.S. News and World Report has an article from last year that the World Health Organization said that measles had been eradicated in the Americas, but that doesn't make any sense because that's not actually true. So who knows? But I'm pretty sure in 1992, American children were not, facing measles epidemics.
In sickness and in
mostly
hockey.
Mostly not.
Oh my God, I should change the name of my other podcast.
You should just do a new podcast.
No, I'm just trying to figure out ways that I can convert my existing podcasts into podcasts about things that I happen to be interested in at any given time.
Well, doing a great job of it right now, I can tell you that much.
Yeah.
Plus, it's if you change your name, then that other girl can have In Sickness and In Health, and there's no more battle.
Oh, yeah, look at that.
It's really a win-win. I don't know why you don't do it.
You're right. You're totally right. It's true.
There's a joke in this that's also in Clueless. Did you catch it, Kara?
I think I might know what you're talking about, and if it's the same thing that I'm thinking of, you're wrong.
No, it's a very similar joke, and I'm not wrong. No,
what is it?
So one of the kids gets knocked out during a practice, and they like take off his helmet and they're doing the like, how many fingers am I holding up? The coaches. And one of the kids is like, he wouldn't know that anyway. And it's the same joke when Ty gets hit on the head.
Oh.
And they're like, what's 7 times 7? And Cher's like, stuff she knows.
Something she knows. Yeah. Okay. I didn't catch that. I was
what
thinking,
were you thinking of?
Because they use the term, I wrote it down, hang on.
They use the term cake,
the term cake eater.
The term cake eater, which is not the same
times.
As the term cake boy. I also Googled
right.
that.
Yeah. Because they refer to Christian in a derogatory way.
Yeah, Mary calls him a cake boy.
Right, which is a slur for a gay person. But cake eater is actually apparently well known throughout Minnesota and refers to people who live in the wealthy suburb of Edina, which references the infamous let them eat cake thing that Marie Antoinette never actually said.
Huh.
So, yeah.
I was telling my friends in my fantasy baseball league about that I was watching this movie, and they were talking about how there's apparently some Navy SEAL show on now, and it's unclear whether it's scripted or just live, like reality or whatever, but apparently they all use cake eater as a insult on that show because they grew up with this movie. Like, Minnesota's a weird place with weird lexicon. Like, earlier,
yeah.
so in a related but completely unrelated story, this year in the NFL, they allowed touchdown celebrations for the first time in several years. Like, they used to, if you did a celebration, you would get flagged for it, which was so much fun. Good job, NFL. But this year, they allowed it again, so there was a lot of teams doing a lot of fun things. And at one point, the Vikings scored a touchdown, and they played Duck, Duck, Goose. But in Minnesota, it's called Duck, Duck, Gray Duck, and apparently, it's the same game.
Yeah.
But there's more that you can do. So, like,
more racial undertones to it?
Well, I don't think it's racial. I mean, it might be. Who knows? Everything in Minnesota is a little bit racist, probably. But there's more fun you can have with it. Because apparently, instead of saying goose, when you say gray duck, that's when they chase you. But, like, you can say green duck.
Right.
And it sounds like it. And you can sort of fake people out. Or you can say literally anything else. But gray duck is the trigger word that goose is. So Minnesota has this whole, weird little lexicon thing. Its own vocabulary that the rest of the world doesn't know, but I guess has come to adopt, like cake eater.
Well, yeah. I think a lot of states have that, right? Like, we adopted a lot of, like, California slang, like Bill and Ted style. That's all I can think of. But I'm sure there's more.
Well, somewhat related to you talking about football, something I just kept thinking about while I was watching this and, like, seeing the kids' heads bump into each other and stuff was like, oh, God, they're poor brains. Especially before they get real helmets. I was, like, really put off by the amount of head trauma that's in this movie.
Well, and the amount that the boys inflict on each other on purpose.
Mm-hmm.
And on the girl. Yeah. They knock the girl over the same way, I guess.
I think it was probably when Adam Banks got hurt. I'm like, oh, he is definitely in concussion protocol right now. Because he, like, goes, like, headfirst into the goalpost. Speaking of the goalpost, the pivotal moment in this movie, at the beginning and the end, the bookend, is that at the beginning of the movie, we see 9-year-old Emilio Estevez on a penalty shot, miss the net. Lane Smith yells at him, disappointed, carries it all through his life, uses it because he hates hockey now, he wants to be the best lawyer. End of the movie, Joshua Jackson, basically little Emilio, does the same move, the triple deke, and this time he scores, but what I thought was really funny was in the full camera shot, he shoots low, like it's a wide open net because he completely fakes the goalie out and the goalie's like splayed out the other way, but he shoots low, but then they do like an insert shot of like the shot going into the net and it's like on the upper inner, like, I don't know if either you caught this, but he shot low and then the insert shot was like the puck going high and it was like, look how close to Emilio he was, but like in the real movie, it wasn't anywhere close to that. So I like that they tried to do the symbolism there, but they're just like, hey, that doesn't match at all, but we don't care because it's a feel-good moment.
How mad do you think the Zamboni guy was after that egg scene?
I was so stressed out about those eggs. I think that's a great exercise, and I actually would really like to do it. But, like, how do you get
soft
eggs
damp
off ice?
I do not know.
That's gross.
Yeah.
I'm sure there's a way.
It was upsetting.
Yes.
I think you just need new ice, to be honest.
I think, could you dump a bunch of water on it?
But then
like
you would just
it
have
around.
You would just have eggy water. Ugh. Yuck.
Ew. Yeah.
I don't know. I guess you have, how would you clean it up? Like, with a razor? Like, would you have to, like, shave it off?
Shave the ice.
But there there are dozens, if not hundreds, of broken eggs in the ice. Like, that is so much work. And I get the idea behind it, but, like, man.
But, like, you could do that on solid ground, also. Like, it doesn't have to be on ice to do this exercise where, like, the point of it is to learn to have soft hands so you're not hitting it, you know, with so much force that it breaks the egg. You're gliding it over, or you're catching it in a way with your stick where it's not slamming against your stick. You could 100% do that on concrete and like just hose it off. You don't have to do that on the ice, but I guess they just left. They did that because they knew people would get really stressed out about eggs on ice.
Eggs on Ice, the Caragallo Regan story.
Oh my god.
I just like that as a title for something. It needs to be the title of something.
I love that as a title.
One of my dreams is to make stop motion movies out of eggs that have like face, like googly eyes and like faces glued on them. And the one that I want to make the most would be called Egg Noir. So they would be wearing like little trench coats and like hats and like, you know, it would be like real dark with like some light coming in the blinds, but it would just be eggs.
Is there a story or
no.
just genre conventions?
I mean, yes, but I don't care what it is. Okay. I just like the visual. And I think it would be really fun to dress up eggs.
Yeah. That sounds really
so fun. That could be the second in the series. Eggs on Ice.
Do you guys want to know my biggest shock in this film? A song comes on. I'm like, is this a Randy Newman song? And then I looked it up, and it's his brother, David Newman, who did the song and has the same voice as Randy Newman, except it's not as good. Like, you know how, like, you know...
Oh, so he's, like, Gallagher's brother.
Yeah. Or, like, literally any famous person's, like, slightly less talented brother. Like...
Eric Roberts.
poor Eric
for
Roberts.
The other Wahlberg.
All the other Wahlbergs.
There are a few Wahlbergs, yeah.
Donnie,
that's who I'm thinking of.
Donnie's in the car outside.
That's what I'm thinking of.
Good old Dan Van Kirk. The best.
He's so good.
The best. But I was like, this has got to be a Randy Newman song, but I feel like I would have seen it. And then I was like, you've got to be kidding me. Like, I didn't know that he had a brother. I didn't know that his brother basically went into the same business as Randy Newman. And then he sounds like it's the same type of song. Like, it's not only the same business, but they're making the same music. It's just not as good. It's remarkable how much it caught me off guard.
Not to be an asshole, but David Newman is Randy Newman's cousin.
Cousins?
Is that more or less weird?
I don't know.
I think it's the same amount of weird.
Yeah. Man, those family holidays must be awkward.
Also, I'm mixing them all up in my head. Because then also Thomas Newman is related.
Whole lot of Newmans.
My brain hurts. It's too many.
Do you guys want to hear the taglines?
Oh, yes, please.
How many are there?
Only two.
Okay.
Neither of them are good.
Are they puns?
No.
Disappointing.
He's never coached. They've never won. Together, they'll learn everything about winning.
Ugh.
They use the word win twice?
Right? Won and winning.
Yeah, but it's the same.
Yeah, it's emphasis. Like, we're using the word for emphasis.
Okay.
Anyway, the second one. They can't skate. They can't win. They can't be serious.
I like that better.
Yeah.
I don't think that I guess it kind of works in the movie. It's not great for this movie.
Yeah. No. Neither of them are very good.
Maybe that should be the game that we play, is you have to make it, you have to write a tagline.
Oh, that sounds really hard. Oh, I did come up with a game. It's not really a game so much as a question. today, while I was watching the biathlon, which is the thing where people ski.
Criminally underrated. It is phenomenal.
It's amazing. It's next to figure skating, I think, probably my favorite event. So I was thinking about if I were to do, like, there's no sport on the planet, I don't think, that is, like, more contrary to my skills and abilities than the biathlon is. I don't do well in the cold. I don't do well in any sort of endurance sport. That's just never going to happen. I'm really shaky all the time, especially after I've exerted myself. So, like, trying to shoot a thing, I would just die during the biathlon, basically. So I was thinking, what Olympic event would kill you the hardest? Like, you personally, what would get you, like, right in your weak spots?
Well, Kara, we were talking about this the other night, and we both agreed that literally all of them would kill both of us. So there's that answer.
Yeah, well, there's that. But, I mean, like, is there one that really stands out?
I feel like luge would be particularly devastating on my body.
Oh, I'm going to disagree hardcore with the ones that you guys don't like.
No, it's not that I don't. No, I like I said, I love the biathlon. I would die. That's all.
I would die with anything that had to do with, like, having endurance for a very long time. But, like, if someone was like, hey, I think I could teach you to luge, I'd be like, oh, yeah, count me in. Like, right now. Tomorrow.
I would love to learn how to luge, but you watch them going down at 90 miles per hour, where you have to, like, slightly turn your body, and you also can't look where you're going. And, like, the thing with luge is, like, to gain even more time, like, you lay your head back even more and just sort of, like, kind of wing it. And it's like, oh, this is terrifying.
Yeah,
that's why you could do skeleton. That's why I'm attracted to it.
But in skeleton, you do get to see where you're going, which I think
that
is actually
seems more
scary. Terrifying.
That's head first,
that seems
right?
More scary.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's terrible.
And you're in your stomach, which also seems very scary.
Yeah. I got to see a lot of wipeouts in the luge today. No one got hurt, though,
that's
amazingly.
Good. That's good.
Yeah, that's wild. That, like, you could crash on one of those things and not only not get hurt, but not die. I find that amazing. Oh, you know what else I learned today?
What's that?
Ice dancers.
Yeah.
The blade on their skates are actually, like, an inch or two shorter in the back than regular figure skaters so that they don't gouge each other in the eyes.
Do they still have toe picks?
Oh, that's smart.
They do have toe picks, but the toe picks are smaller.
Important.
Because they don't do the kind of jumps that regular figure skaters do, so they don't need it to be as big, and also so that they don't gouge each other in the eye.
They're just too busy twizzling.
I love twizzles now. I like it because if you watch ice dancing too, like, it seems like everybody hates twizzles, but it's a required element in their routines.
Who's everybody?
The judges kept talking about it, like, twizzles were, like, the worst thing ever. Like,
oh,
it was,
okay.
Like, this horrible thing that everybody hates but you have to do. That's what they were talking about. I don't know anything about twizzles or skating, but
I think they're just really hard to do, and especially, like, synchronized.
And they have to do series of them. So in the ice dancing that I was watching, they would have to do, like, one going one way, and then they'd have to go the other way, and then they would go the first way again. So it was always a series of three of them.
But the Shib Sibs did four, just because they're like, hey, we're the best in the world.
Yeah, they threw in an extra one.
Whoa.
I'm 100% convinced that the two of them are Westworld robots.
Very possible.
Because they're just so, like, good and precise. Don't get me wrong. I love them. They're amazing. They even produced and directed their own, like, Olympic feature segment, which is amazing. But they're definitely robots. Which brings me to talking about how many robots there are at this Olympics. 80 or so robots that they have. And as of yet, I haven't seen a single robot go rogue, which I'm shocked by. And they have, like, tons of crazy drones.
I have a question that I was thinking about yesterday that's skating related.
Okay.
Do they mic the ice so that you can hear the skates?
Ooh, that's a good question because you can
You
hear the
can really
skates.
hear them. But I
And you
was.
wouldn't be able to unless they make the ice, so
They
I'm gonna go
might
ahead
have
and say
shotgun
yes.
mics that are aimed at the ice,
Yeah.
a bunch of them.
But they're very
Yeah.
careful about, I feel like they're really careful about when they're on and when they're off because, like, I was saying this to my roommate yesterday and we were debating it, and it was right after what's her name did the triple axel. And she
Mariah
like
Nagasu.
screamed and yelled at the end of her routine
Yeah.
with like joy.
And you didn't
You
hear
couldn't
it.
hear
Oh,
that.
yeah.
So but they
You
turned
are
the ice
right.
mics off immediately. Like what? I'm curious about how that
Well,
works.
so that might be true, or like Joey was saying, if they have shotgun mics and the shotguns are like down in the baseboards, you know, so that it's only at foot
Yeah.
level, it wouldn't necessarily pick up somebody yelling. They also might just like
Yeah.
cut the mic as soon as somebody
I
finishes
think because
because,
that was my guess. I was like, oh, they probably
yeah.
just shut it off like the moment you don't need the drama of the sound of the skate cutting through the ice anymore,
Which is one of
they
my
don't use
favorite
that
parts
feat
of figure
anymore.
skating is the sound. Yeah.
It sounds like swords. If you close your eyes, it sounds like a sword fight sometimes,
It basically
which I
is.
really like. Yeah.
Yeah. I don't really have anything else to say about the Mighty Ducks, but I would be very into continuing to talk about figure skating.
I'm gonna read my notes.
I have one other. I have two other notes. Number one, I like that they got to meet the Dallas Stars. That was cool. Mike Modano was actually a really big hockey player for a while, so that was cool that they got to meet him.
They were not the Dallas Stars yet, though. I believe they were actually a Minneapolis
The
team.
Minnesota
And
North
then,
Stars.
yeah.
And the other thing that I liked was, just like he does in Daredevil, in this movie, Foggy, whoever, what's his name? His name is Eldon Henson. I think his brother is also in this movie or something. Like, one of them dyed their hair.
Yeah.
Foggy gets tossed from the game after he defends the figure skater's honor. And I was like, oh, just like in Daredevil, he's always lusting after Karen Page. And yet he doesn't have her. Like, he's always being like a gentleman, like an upstanding citizen, and you know, defending the lady's honor, and then never gets rewarded. Oh, I also liked, related to this, isn't there like a there's like a little bit of a backseat love story that like there's kids holding hands in the
Oh, yeah.
crowd? Is that Marguerite Moreau or is it the figure skater? I don't
Yeah.
remember.
No,
Yeah.
it's her.
Yeah, they make out hardcore after they win the game.
They do?
Yeah.
No, I didn't see that.
I didn't see that
Oh,
either.
yeah, I noticed it because it just looked so odd, like trying to make out on skates. It sounds hard and it looked difficult. Like they were kind of like tipping the top half of their bodies toward each other while their feet kind of skate out from underneath them.
That sounds dangerous.
Yeah.
I got nothing else about
Crazy.
this movie, I don't think.
I
Oh,
got some
no.
stuff
There's
that's. Oh, yeah, go.
I have one other thing. I like that in the middle of this movie, there's Hans, who is a real person, but also sort of feels like a ghost. Like, he kind of feels like this guy that only Emilio
Yes.
Estevez can see.
Yeah, he's
Yes.
definitely a ghost.
But I like that in the middle of this movie, Emilio gets his groove back basically by getting a fresh pair of skates and like skating around the ice. I was like, oh, okay, that this is just his moment to shine. It never comes back. Like, we just have that one shot of him like skating around a rink alone. But I was like, that's kind of cool.
I
Yeah.
also thought
Well,
that was nice.
I think that sets up, because at the end of the movie, he's leaving to go try out for the minor leagues or whatever. So I think that scene and that ghost relationship kind of sets it up. Because otherwise, if he just like decided to try out for the minors and we hadn't seen him actually put on a pair of skates, it would have been weird.
I have a sports question. Like a game sports question. He hasn't played hockey in like, how long do you think it's been since he's played hockey? 20 years?
At least 20 years, but probably closer to 30. Yeah.
So, no, well, so he's probably about 30 in this because I looked up how old Emilio Estevez was. So, like, let's say he's 30, maybe quit when he was 10. It's been 20 years since he played hockey. Does it stick with you like that? And
No.
don't you have to be in shape?
I mean, there's like a certain amount of, like riding a bike with muscle memory, like once you get back on skates and you get out there. But like, yeah, unless he's been conditioning and like training and skating and
Okay,
because
that's what I
also,
thought.
I mean, it's not just skating, like with hockey, like you also have the stick, and you need to be able to handle the stick and the puck, unless you're just one of those guys that, like, skates into people.
That part could be, like muscle memory. Like, I feel like, if anything, that's probably the part you retain forever. And, like, pick up again, like, rather quickly if you were really good at it.
Yeah.
Anyway, I'm just curious, because I tend to do, like, rather intense sports where you definitely couldn't be like, hey, I haven't done this since I was 10. Let's go.
Well, I feel like in any sport, if you're going to start competing at a professional or semi-professional level, like, you can't just pick it up and start doing it after 20 years and be at the point where you're getting on a bus to go try out for the
minor. Oh, yeah, no, he's going to get embarrassed at those tryouts. Like, it's going to be bad. one show, I don't know if you got either of you...
He needs that, though.
I don't know if either of you watched the show on Showtime, Smilf, but Smilf is great. I think you would both like it. A lot of strong ladies on that show. But the lead, Frankie Shaw, I don't remember what character name she plays, but the woman who created the show, who stars in the show, plays basketball, and they have, like, an open tryout for the WNBA. And, like, you've seen her playing basketball in a couple different episodes, you know, always dribbling, always shooting, and seems, like, pretty good for, like, a regular person. And then she goes to the tryouts and is way outclassed. And I like that it was, like, realistic and grounded, because you're like, oh, because this is, you know, on the one hand, you're like, oh, this is a TV show, like, she's going to be great, and she's going to make the team, and it's going to be, like, sort of a direction. But, like, it's such a gritty, honest, real show that even though she's good and she still plays basketball all the time, she's outclassed by people who are taller than her and faster than her and better than her and who've been playing basketball way more than she has. And so in this movie, for Emilio Estevez to be like, hey, I've been around kids playing hockey, I'm going to go try out for the NHL, that's not going to happen. I think there's a reason he comes back in the second movie, because he's not in the NHL.
Yeah,
yeah, because he said apparently, he was going to...
In the second, like, the first scene in the second, the last scene in the first movie is him getting on the bus, and then the first scene in the second movie is him getting off the bus, so. I saw somebody tweeted the other night during the figure skating event that, like, they should have a normal person go out there, like, before any of the actual skaters come out, have a normal person go out there and try and do these things, just so you can see.
Oh, yeah, for context.
Yeah, because they make it look so easy.
And, yeah, do that for all the sports. Have somebody put on a snowboard and just give it a try.
Yeah, because, like, I even get this sometimes where I'm like, I could probably do that if I wanted to. Like, if I tried really hard, I could probably do that, right? Which is, like, 100% untrue.
You're like those commercials where it's for the Paralympics, or the Paralympics. Is it Paralympics? Paralympics. There's no in the middle, right?
Paralympics.
Paralympics.
Yeah.
Where we see the baby born with no legs, and it's like odds of winning a medal like 1 in 6 million or whatever. And then, like, as she keeps getting older and getting better, it eventually gets to 1 to 1. But you are watching TV. You're like, I'm already at like 1 to 4. Like, I'm not got a 1 in 4. Like, if I really wanted to, I got like a 1 in 4 shot of like getting a medal at the Olympics.
Yeah. Well, see, my approach, I was thinking about this the other night during the opening ceremony, and because it's been increasingly more common over recent Olympic cycles for people to compete for countries they're not actually from. Either they were born there, or they moved there, or the country straight up bought them, or they're super rich and they're like, I want to be in the Olympics. So, like, in Sochi, there was this couple who were quote unquote from Turks and Caicos, when really they were just like super rich and like had a house there and then competed in skiing or something, because you know, if there's no one else from your country attempting to do this, then you can actually go to the Olympics. And, like, sure, you're not going to win, but, like, you were there.
That happens in gymnastics, too.
Yeah, so I was thinking, like, if I had a time machine, I would go back in time to when I was younger and more spry and less prone to dislocating every bone in my body, and compete for Ireland, because they have very few Winter Olympic athletes, and my grandparents are from there, so I could totally get dual citizenship. So I have like a whole plan if ever I happen across a time machine and a new body.
Well, is that why Israel has such a good figure skating team? Because there's so many people, like that girl who trains in Hackensack is on the Israel team.
I think the whole team trains in Hackensack, actually, the Ice House.
Do you know if they were born in Israel, or is it people who are pulling the U and like, oh, my grandparents are from Israel, I'm going to be an Israeli citizen and compete for them. Because, like, I don't equate Israel and figure skating or, like, just winter very much, but, like, they're great at figure skating.
It is in the desert, yep. I don't know. I think Israel is a weird example just because of, like, the Jewish diaspora and
right.
how Israel came together as a state to begin with.
Yeah.
And the relationship that Jews have to Israel, and, like, a lot of people go back and forth a lot. So I
yeah,
that's
a
probably,
lot of,
like, the
yeah.
wrong example.
But there is, there is a, wasn't there a Korean ice dancing couple?
Yeah. They're both Americans.
Yeah, like I was
one
like,
of them's actually
is,
a
like,
white guy.
He is not Korean. Like I couldn't.
Yeah.
He's only yeah. He moved to Korea like 2 years ago, like just so he could do this.
Yeah, and because Korea is such a small country, or South Korea, and they didn't know that they were going to be this combined Korean team with North Korea until like January, so last month. So Korea actually did wind up kind of importing a lot of athletes for these games because they're hosting it and they like want to have a strong showing and just didn't have the kind of you know well of athletes that someplace like the United States has where you know there's just we have such a large population and then you know there's a lot of other factors that go into this sort of thing.
And that's the same thing we see in like the World Baseball Classic. I guess it's probably anything where the whole world competes at something, but you could probably maybe make the American team, or you could go play for like the Netherlands or something and then be like a star on that team. So I think wherever there's like a concentration, because I mean figure skating, I'm sure people do it all around the world, but I'm sure it's mostly like America and Canada and Russia, or like mostly
and well wealthier countries.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Because it is an extraordinarily expensive sport.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, I don't know. Figure skating, it's usually the United States and Canada are, the United States, Canada, and Russia are kind of the supreme people in it. And then France and Italy usually are contenders, although not generally medal contenders. I think this is the first year that Israel has kind of like broken through.
Yeah, because I don't remember them being good. Not that I really remember much about past Olympics other than Yulia Lipnitskaya, but like I don't remember them ever being this good because they are like not as good as the big three, but they're close.
Yeah. Yeah, they really killed it this year,
yeah.
Which was unexpected. The whole field has been really strong so far. We've only seen the team event, so I'm looking forward to the individual.
But most of them are going to go on to be individual stuff too, right? Like there's a lot of bleed over there, or is there not?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Pretty much everyone who competed on everyone who competed in the team event will be also competing as individuals.
Okay.
The team event, they only introduced during the last Olympics in Sochi. So it's still a very new event. Figure skating is like a really solitary sport. So it's actually been really nice to see the team kind of like come together and compete together.
Now, if Ashley Wagner had made the team, what would she have done? Like the short program or the long program? Like one of those?
Maybe. She may not have skated at all in the team event. So we sent three men and three women singles. So we had
Brady Tennell.
Brady Tennell, who skated. Did she do both programs?
Might have been. I saw her a couple
short
times, I think.
Long. Yeah. Oh, see, I already can't remember. Yeah, so not everyone who is skating for the United States skated for the team event. I don't think that they get a medal if they didn't participate in that, but there's only, you know, so many slots for the team event. So Ashley Wagner, depending on the strength of her programs, may or may not have
gotcha.
Been in the team event. Mariah Nagasu skated the long program because she had that triple axel, which is something that isn't very common in the female field because it's so fucking hard to do. So they put her in there because that jump is worth so many more points than other jumps. Oh, right. So Brady Tinell skated the short program. Mirai skated the long program. Now I remember. But I am so excited that Ashley Wagner is still raking in those endorsement deals, even though she didn't even make the team. It's amazing. She is my hero.
Well, I think because
I've seen her
like leading up to the games before you actually see them, like she's more recognizable than Brady Tinell. Like, you know, in a month it might be Brady Tinell or whatever. Like, people might not remember Ashley Wagner, but for now, she's still got that, you know. I'm sure even Gracie Gold, if she was, you know, still in the public eye, she would be there too. Probably, maybe. Who knows?
Yeah. Oh, for sure. I mean, yeah, she had a ton of endorsement deals the last time around, and I think to some people she was kind of a disappointment, like, you know, which is, we put too much on athletes, but she was a disappointment because she didn't, you know, get the gold, Gracie Gold. I feel so bad. People put so much on top of her. But, yeah, I don't know. It's great because I've seen Ashley Wagner in two different brand commercials. She's in Toyota and Bridgestone tires. So
very exciting. Very
exciting.
And also, I don't remember if we said it, but Johnny Weir is in the, or Johnny and Tara are both in the Google Home commercial, right? So.
Oh, yeah. I forgot about that already.
Love it.
Yeah. Well, do you guys have anything else to say about these things?
I got nothing. Jordan, you got anything?
Okay. Oh. So there's like one more movie that I wish that we had time to do, which we don't, but it's called Ice Angel, and it's from the year 2000, and the premise is a popular hockey player and an ice skater die on the same day, and the soul of the skater goes to heaven, but the hockey player is reborn into the body of the figure skater.
Interesting. Weird.
And weird. Interesting. And I don't know if they star in it, because that would be crazy, but Tara Lipinski and Nancy Kerrigan are second and third billed in the movie.
What?
So they're both in that. As are Alan Thicke.
Rest in power.
He might be the only... Yeah. He's the only other name I know.
Did either of you, speaking of movies where kids die, did either of you watch about 20 years ago, there was a show, I think it was on for 1 year, it might be terrible, I have very fond memories of it, called Teen Angel?
Oh, that sounds really familiar.
I don't
Hang
know
on.
What that is.
It's about, it's a TV show where, like, it's two buddies, and one of them eats a hamburger that's been under the other guy's bed for months, like, they're in high school or whatever, and he eats a hamburger that's been under there for months, and he dies instantly. And then is basically just tagging along, being the main guy's invisible friend, sort of. I don't remember the premise at all outside of that. I'm looking at the cast on IMDb right now. I do not recognize.
It's on TGIF.
Yes. Ron Glass, who also passed away, I believe, but was a book, Shepherd Book, on Firefly and Serenity. He was in it as God's cousin Rod. This show might be terrible. I don't know, but I remember loving it when I
Sounds
was
great.
10. So,
who was dead in Angels in the Outfield?
I don't know.
That's what that made me think of. Was like, this is another sports movie where there's definitely like ghosts in it, right?
Yeah,
I guess so. I mean, there's angels out there.
Another angel movie.
When a boy prays for a change to have a family, Oh, a boy prays for a chance to have a family if the California Angels win the pennant. Angels are assigned to make that possible. That doesn't make any sense.
Oh, so nobody died in it. There's just a bunch of angels. All right, never mind. Not the same.
Another movie with a bunch of
angels. I think you're thinking
though.
Of If You Build It, They Will Come.
Yes.
Right?
No, because I've never seen that.
That's Field of Dreams.
I mean, I know Field of Dreams, yeah, but I've never seen it.
But Jordan, a movie that you have seen with a bunch of angels in it is City of Angels. Shout out Cage
Club. I'm not thinking of City of Angels. I didn't like that movie.
Well, it's not very good, but go listen to it, because you were on that episode of Cage Club, so go listen to
that.
I
was on that episode.
With Meg Ryan in the bathtub. You watch a lot of movies with us where the women are in bathtubs near men. Except this one, you know, Keanu and Charlize in the bathtub together in Sweet November. And this one, Cage looking exasperated,
watching her in the bathtub.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe there's just a lot of. I think that there's just a lot of ladies in bathtubs.
In bathtubs.
In movies, which is like not. Not that I don't take baths, but that's like not really a thing in real life.
So there's actually.
I mean, I don't know. I'm a bath person. If I had a bathtub, I would be in a bathtub all
yeah,
the time.
Yeah, I guess I am a bath person too, but like they all have these, like in the movies, they have these like. Big, like luxurious, like that
elaborate
is
setups.
Not what taking a bath
candles
is like.
And like flower petals. I don't know. I think it's, and I might just think this because of that movie Pleasantville, but I think a lot of times it's a stand-in for women's masturbation.
Oh, definitely.
Yeah.
There is a short film. I don't know if it's available online. I saw it at Fantastic Fest before. They showed 7852, which is the documentary about the shower scene in Hitchcock, which is really cool. Like, they made an entire movie about one scene from another movie, so that was cool.
My aunt is very close friends with his mother, with that director's mother. I've met him, and I've met his mother.
Cool. Well, before that movie, there was a short film called Nothing a Little Soap and Water Can't Fix, and it's essentially a supercut, like you would find on Vimeo, of bathtub and shower scenes from like every movie. And there's, like you were saying, there's so many times that ladies get in bathtubs, like the same thing happens over and over again. Like, it's a 6-minute video of like essentially one scene playing out, but they're
funny.
All go from like relaxing to maybe masturbating to getting killed and like the bathtub filling up with blood. And it's just, you have this idea. I think it proves more than anything else that, like, if you have an idea for something in a movie, it's been done before. Because, like, you see 5 or 6 examples of the same things over and over again in, like, you know, in just this specific situation, scenario, whatever.
Yeah. I don't know, though. Like, because we say that, like, if you have an idea, everything's been done before, and, like, there's no story that hasn't been told. But then, I mean, if you, like, shift your perspective a little bit to the fact that, to just the egregious disparities between who has been able to write and direct and produce films, you know, like, I don't know. I just think that there's a lot of stories that haven't been told and a lot of bathtub scenes that might be different if women were
allowed to. But you don't know.
Do
you know what? Yeah, what if in 10 years we have, like, you know, a huge range of, like, different kinds of filmmakers and they're still making the same dumb bathtub scenes?
Yeah. I mean, that would be disappointing.
Like, maybe that's, like, just a constant. Like, we can't even help it.
It's a Jungian archetype. Women in bathtubs.
Not. I hope not.
Well, you know, when we bring up Carl Jung, that means it's the end of the podcast. That's what you guys do every week, right? You just bring up Carl Jung,
yep.
And that's how you wrap it up.
Yes. So, Joey, other than Sweet November and other such things, do you have anything that you want to promote?
This episode comes out when? In next week, right? Spoiler alert for when we're recording this. In a week from Saturday, past guest Mike Manzi's podcast comes out, Third Time's a Charm. Where he looks at the third movies in film franchises. I know that Kara's on at least, I think Kara's on 2 episodes in season 1. She's on more often than I am. I'm on the first one, mm-hmm. So obviously the best episode. But Kara's on 2 different episodes in season 1, so they're coming out on the 3rd of the month, every month.
And if people have been listening to this podcast, they've heard me talk about Jaws 3 several times.
Mm-hmm.
So you can finally hear that episode.
I've only seen Jaws 1 and Jaws 4. So I've never seen Jaws 3. Probably won't be watching Jaws 3 for... Should I watch it before I listen to your episode or no?
You don't have to. I think it's a really interesting movie, though. I was surprised by it.
There's a couple movies he's doing in season 1 that I've never seen that I'm going to see, like Alien 3 and The Godfather 3. And I'm spoiling what he is covering because in the episode, you can go subscribe now. The episode will be up next Saturday, but already on iTunes and Google Play and Stitcher and everywhere you get podcasts, you can listen to it. And at the end of what I think is really cool, and I'm saying this to you guys because it's not out yet, but at the end of his intro thing, like saying what the show is, he does sort of like this little trailer mashup of the 6 different movies he's covering. So it's really cool. So he sort of announced the 6 that he's covering. But I'm excited to see like Godfather 3 and Alien 3 for the first time. Jaws 3, not so sure about.
I find it really interesting. If you are interested in theme parks, if you are interested in poorly aged 3D technology, if you are interested in a young Leah Thompson as a water skier, this is the movie for
I mean,
you.
it all sounds great to me. Also, yesterday, the first episode of Winona Forever came out, so go listen to that if you like Winona Ryder, and who doesn't like Winona Ryder?
My mom hates Winona Ryder.
Well, your mom is wrong.
I do think she's like probably the only one though.
Have you guys done a Winona movie for this podcast yet, or no?
Yeah, we did Little Women.
Yep.
My favorite one.
There you go. What else is coming out?
Although, I don't know, maybe Beetlejuice is also my favorite.
Beetlejuice is very good. I watched Heathers recently and I didn't like it anymore.
I've only seen it once. I liked it the first time. I gotta watch it again. And
I
also,
can see why watching it as an adult like would be less enjoyable.
It made me feel sick. I didn't like it.
Yeah, it's very dark. Like, and not necessarily in a super fun way.
2 days ago, the second episode of The Contenders came out, where we talked about Wonder Woman. I joined Tobin and Aislinn. I think we have another podcast debuting next. Ooh, maybe in a week or two? Can't say what it is yet, just in case it doesn't happen, but that's also happening. But there's a whole like slew of new shows. What's cool is that it's a lot of different things, like similar in scope and style to what we talk about already, but different topics, different hosts. A lot of talk about strong women, so that's cool. The Contenders, like going on a week where the Contenders, because you guys are on the same week, but the Contenders to Winona to Wishful Thinking, that's a lot of strong movies about women, I think. So good job, all of you.
Hell yeah.
Midweek pick me up.
Even though this movie isn't, the Mighty Ducks is
We
not really
actually
about
tend to
strong
watch
women.
movies that aren't strong about women, but then we complain about it, so.
It's yeah, you're building up the world by tearing it down, one brick at a time.
Yes.
But you have lots of good stuff. I mean, just go to cageclub.me or facebook.com/cageclub or at cageclubpod on Twitter and just check out what we're doing, because we have a ridiculous, like, when Mike and I started doing this 3 years ago, just talking about Nicolas Cage movies, I had no idea what this would become. And we now have, I think, 17 or 18 shows or something. So just go check them out.
Yeah, it's insane.
It's a lot.
It's
It's a lot.
a lot.
That's all I got, though. That's enough. I think that's enough of a plug.
Okay, how about you, Jordan?
I got nothing. Listen to my See November episode in a couple weeks, I guess. Joey said that already, though.
Let me get the
On Watch
exact
the
date.
Throne.
Hold on. So this comes out today, if you're listening to this, is the 22nd. Sweet November comes out March 9th. So next, no, 2 weeks from tomorrow. I was right the first time.
If you want to hear
Well,
me
as long as
yell a
people are
lot.
subscribed to Watch the Throne, it'll wind up in their podcast feeds.
You got it. And then Carol will be on an episode in 2 months, and then 2.5 months, and then a few months after that. So lots of wistful thinking on Watch a Throne, which is very nice.
Exciting stuff. I'm tired, so I'm just gonna say goodbye.
Goodbye.
Bye.